You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
It's the Anfield Wrap with Mike Kearney, Mo Stewart and Ian Salmon. I'm John Gibbons, and Liverpool are in the fourth round of the FA Cup. But firstly, 2024 is upon us, which means a packed schedule of FA Cup, AFCON and of course Premier League action. So beat the January Blues and watch every game with the atmosphere it deserves down at your local Green King Sports pub. Don't settle for a dodgy stream if it's on the telly. If it's on at your local Green King across the huge HD screens. If you download the Green King Sports app, you'll also receive 10% off every single drink whenever there's a game on. And there's a lot of games on at the moment. The venues offer a range of low and no alcohol options. I could have done with some of them yesterday, mates. So dry January doesn't mean you have to settle for a worse sports watching experience. So to the game. Let's talk about the team first of all, Mo, because it was interesting to me sort of how strong he went and also who he picked. I was expecting, you know, a little bit of Jota from the start. He held him back a little bit. But I think it is fair to say it was a stronger team than most maybe collectively picked, even though, I mean, we did the Friday show before me and Ian, and we ended up with quite a strong team, but not quite as strong as the one we saw.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I think in a lot of people's minds, if you look at this game in the first leg of the Fulham game, you'd say that that one's probably more important because the semi-final is closer to the actual trophy. But maybe not. Maybe we're going to see more changes for that. But there was also the kind of psychological element with the fact that because it's Arsenal, because we are both fighting at the top of the league, you don't really want to maybe concede. You don't want to put out a massive reserve team and they put out their strongest team and then they end up getting battered.
Yeah.
So it was always going to be a team where we were good enough to win. And I looked at that 11 at the start and thought, this 11 can win the game.
Everything from Klopp before, during and after, Ian suggested that he felt it was a big game. So before is the team that he puts out. During the game, he's very animated. Indeed, he's enjoying it. He loves the goals. I had to think about the contrast between his first season when Divo Origi scored it against Wolves in an FA Cup game and he looked like he wants to throttle him. I was thinking about the contrast between this one and you know, him going absolutely wild on the side. It's fair to say that the Klopp and the FA Cup have been on a journey. But is it? I don't know if it was just because it was an FA Cup game, or maybe it was because it was Arsenal going there, and there's a psychological element and the stuff that Mo's talking about afterwards. You can see he's pumped as well. It felt like a big game, you know, for Jürgen, yeah. in maybe different ways, not just because, you know, he suddenly realises the FA Cup's quite fun.
Well, it's a massive game. I think the fact that he's won the FA Cup obviously alters his opinion of what the FA Cup is. I think he said so after winning it.
Yeah.
That, you know, it had changed what he thinks of the Cup. And obviously the Cup is now an important thing to him as much as anything else. And I'm sure he's now completely bought into the idea of the quadruple this season. So thanks, Jürgen. You're on board now. It was a massive game, and I think on Friday we went with a fairly strong team, but we had Conor Bradley at right back and Owen Beck at left back because nobody bothered to tell us that Owen Beck had a card from somewhere in Scotland that meant he couldn't play.
By the way, I'd love to be in the room with someone who told Jürgen that, by the way, because I bet you he didn't know before he recalled it.
No,
there's somebody in the back office just after they brought Owen Beck back gone. there's this card, you know, and we think it might actually apply in England. Yeah, so we expect him, but we did think it was going to be quite a strong team. And we kind of got the midfield pretty much right because we haven't got that many midfielders. So the team itself, I thought, you know, that's a really strong team. And then I looked up at the bench, went, oh, okay. there's not a lot of changes here, is there? And it turned out there were more changes than I thought.
Well, there was changes on the pitch as well, Mike, which I thought was quite interesting. And that's how I felt the manager got to grips with the game. Or maybe found new ways to test Arsenal. And I felt it was really interesting, you know, seeing how they set up at first and how the forwards in particular were interchanging. But then you had, you know, Gakpo starting midfield and ending up sort of up front. And he was, when you haven't got the changes off the bench, you know, that doesn't mean you can't adapt. And I thought the manager and the players were trying to do that a few times during the game.
Yeah, the beauty of having players that can do more than one position is the fact that you don't have to use a substitution straight away to change it. You know, we literally see him do a half-time, Diaz on the right, which felt mad at the time, but ended up being genius, really, because we had Darwin down the left as well, and Elliot back into midfield. Look like they can all half to the ball, they can all play really well. We've got pace where we need it when we make them changes, and we sort of treaded water for a long time in that first half, and Arsenal had chances, and yes, you know, we could have been better, but we ended up sort of playing our way into the game as we grew, as the changes came in, and once we sort of got over that bit, this Liverpool team can sort of do that now in games. They're not just having their moments and losing there and heads dropping. They're getting through it and they're going, right, we'll tweak something at half time here, we'll change it again, you know, we'll get more of the ball. You know, their presence here. There's lots of things about that game where we're missing a lot of players, and yet we still managed to tweak the original 11 that we put out and look better and look like we were going to score and look like really we were going to punish Arsenal, and we end up doing so. And it's late in the game, and everyone was crying for a goal, weren't they? Jürgen was on about going, like, I reckon Jürgen would have gone on the pitch at some point and just booted it in someone's goal, just because it was getting later and later. And but that's huge for us. And I remember saying after the Leicester game in the Cup how these players who are getting more minutes now because we're in competitions and we're winning games and stuff like that, I remember saying it sort of gave me a little bit of a 21-22 vibe. You can't argue with that now. It's absolutely in your face. You know, we're winning, we're top of the league, going into the knockouts of the European Cup, getting through in the FA Cup, in the semi-final of the other one, the League Cup, which is why everyone thought, oh, we might have rest a couple of players here, because, you know, we've actually got a semi-final that we win, we go in the final, and we can actually win a thing. No, we went strong, and as I said, we missed a lot of players, but we managed to have enough fit and enough quality and enough fearlessness, really, out of the kids that we bring on to be able to, you know, adapt and just have that utter, the manager wants me to do this, I'll do it. And Bobby Clark takes that yellow, which is, I put that on the live buildings, to be honest. just let everyone watch that all week, because that's experience in just in an inexperienced kid. And I think that's the whole vibe I'm getting from this team now. It's absolutely put my teeth in, the togetherness of it, and the being able to roll the sleeves up and get through it is what we've seen yesterday.
It didn't look like it was necessarily going to be the case after 5 minutes, though. Mm-hmm. They were all over us. There's one, I mean, it's literally seconds in the Jesus chance. I watched the highlights back this morning, and I was surprised that the co-commentator really goes for Trent on it. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, it's a long ball down the middle to the centre forward. You know, I'm looking at Konate, and listen, Konate goes on to have a brilliant game, but I think that maybe wakes him up a little bit. He goes, oh, hang on, I've not got Virgil. You know, but I don't know, it just seems like, I don't know, maybe I'm being a bit too sensitive to it, but I feel like, you know, anything, I'll blame Trent. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, no, that's definitely true. And I think it's one of those where if you're not really aware of how and why it's happening, then the most obvious answer is that if the ball's played over there, then it's that fella's fault. But no, I'm like you, I think Konate, and I think it's destructive the way that Konate reacts once he realises the ball's over his head.
Yeah.
Because he's not rash, he doesn't slide in and make a tackle, he just gets himself in between the ball and the goal. So if the ball was on target, once he goes around Alisson, he's there to stop it. And that was the thing that I took from this game. It was that Liverpool gave Arsenal opportunities, or they gave them kind of squeaks. They kind of opened the door a little bit, but then they slammed it back in their face. And there was so much narrative about Arsenal having lots of chances and doing all this well, and like it was only their finishing that was letting them down. Well, to be honest, part of the reason they're finishing was letting them down is because Liverpool were making it difficult for them once they were actually getting to the point of swinging their boot to try and score the goal. Like, they maybe they got into positions, but then so did we. And that ability to bounce back, to snap back into focus when a mistake is made, that is the thing that we were missing so badly last season. Like, I was thinking about this during the game. Do you remember last season when a player from Liverpool would be beaten and there'd be a counter-attack on and you'd watch them and they wouldn't be running back? They'd just be walking back, or they wouldn't even be running back at all. We'd be watching it thinking, what the hell's going on? Go after the ball. Never see that this season. Everybody's running after everything. That grit, that fight for each other, for every single ball is there. And I believe that's why we're able to withhold tough moments in games, because we know that we're together and we know that if we're still in the game come the last 15 minutes, we can do the business.
And that's really shown for the one where Odegaard hits the bar, I think, Ian, because when you look at it first time, it's obviously a bit of a mess. Joe Gomez gets caught on the ball unnecessarily, I would say. I actually think Quantz has given him a decent option there. It's, sometimes in these situations, I feel a bit sorry for the player, because you're like, you know, if passing lanes are closed and people aren't moving forward, and you can dally a little bit too long because of that. But I think it is on Gomez. He does have the option of Quantz, but you know, it happens. But how they react to that, the Canate block is brilliant. Like, that's that's an easier chance than the one that eventually falls to Odegaard. But it's just an unbelievable block, and then it. Also, but we react to that. So it's not just, oh, he's got to block in, let's just sort of react. And so when it comes to Odegaard, he's got five players between him and the goal. And this is what Mo's talking about, is that we're reacting better, we're backing each other up. And so Odegaard hits the bar because he's not got much goal to hit, because he's got so many players sort of between him. He's conscious that there's the best goalie in the world there and stuff like that as well. I think sometimes when you've played someone recently, it can actually, these things can get into players' heads a little bit as well. And so I think, although that look felt like a bit of a mess when I was in the ground and watching back, it's not great. There is actually elements of really good defender within there that like Mo says, force them to not do great finishing.
Yeah, we basically dig a really good defensive performance out of ourselves, because we are shaky for a while there. And it would have felt worse in the ground. It felt worse watching on telly live, because everything felt perilous. It felt like there was jeopardy all over the place. We could concede any moment. You've got, as someone said on Twitter, if you turn the commentator off, there's not a great deal in this game. And I think that's right, because you've got Alan Shearer going, they should have scored five. Well, he shouldn't have, Alan, because they're XG. And I know I'm not particularly XG-focused, but their XG was 1.3. So they shouldn't have scored five, should they? That's not how the world works.
Yeah.
They could have scored five, but they shouldn't have, because their actual finish was poor, because we made, as you just said, we made their finishing poor.
Even the Havertz header, he gives him a bit of a lead, doesn't he? Yeah.
That's not talked about. The Havertz header, he heads wide because Quantz has made enough of a back to actually pull him off.
Yeah.
And that's good defending. Yeah. There's a great moment where Joe Gomez takes the ball off someone's foot in the area.
Of Saka.
It doesn't even get talked about in the game. They're talking about, you know, another wasteful Arsenal chance. That lad's just defended brilliantly. So there were loads of little moments, and you get the occasional moment where we're giving the ball away early on. But Arsenal are a very good football team who close you down in threes. So they are going to block your passing lanes off, and you are going to give the ball away. But from there, if you can dig out that performance, and there was a moment on last night's Match of the Day where, what's his face, Martin Keown, said that, you know, the senior players had to stand up. So the senior players, Trent and Canate. Canate's 22.
Yeah,
he's not a senior player. It's like, come on, just pay me to go on Match of the Day, because at least I'll give you some facts about the team. Canate was absolutely imperious all the way through. Quantz was good most of the game. He had a couple of little dodgy things, but you know, why is he a 20-year-old lad?
Yeah,
we played brilliantly yesterday, and no one's even talking about, we'll get to it obviously, but Joe Gomez for the first goal. You know, everything we've said about Tsimikas not being able to get to the byline. Joe Gomez is at the corner flag to put that ball back to Gravenberch. Our defence was brilliant yesterday. It took him 15, 20 minutes to dig that out, and we rode our luck a little bit. But you've got to ride your luck. I know Arteta last night and this morning has been quoted as saying, you know, they're a little short in a couple of departments. Well, you spent £250 million, mate. You need a number nine. You spent £100 million on Declan Rice, and he's not really improved your team a huge amount, certainly not £100 million quid's worth, so tough. by somebody who scores goals, you'd be a lot better off.
And we've got loads of them, Mike, and that's a nice situation. I actually think that the game changes on the Trent chance in a funny way. I don't know what you think, because up to that moment, you know, we are finding it tougher. Then just out of nowhere, we create a good opportunity. It's a brilliant hit. I think Gakpo's brilliant for it. He's really good at finding those balls in tight spaces, holding off a challenge. I like that Cody Gakpo decides when he's being fouled. Like, he's one of those players, isn't he? Where he's like, no, you don't foul me. I'll go down perhaps if I want to, and not in a sort of a diving way, because sometimes he's just getting volleyed and he's like, no, not going down. I'm going over there, and it's brilliant. And he does that, and the way he carries the ball, you know, from those sort of number eight positions through to the goal is a real asset of his. And then he pops it off to Trent, and it's a lovely controlled hit, isn't it, from Trent? It's the hit of a really confident boy. He's like, no, I don't have to absolutely smash this. I can hit it in a sort of controlled way. And he is really unlucky. But I think that has a big psychological effect on us, because it's like, oh yeah, right, yeah, okay, yeah, we can create chances. You know, remember, our strengths as well. But also, I think I don't think they're the same after that either.
It sort of reminds me a bit of the City knockout game in the Champions League the other year, where we win the first leg quite comfortably, but then they're all over us, and like they go 1-0 up, don't they? And they're saying they could have another one, blah blah blah, and then we have a mad counter attack, and everyone goes, oh yeah, we can do that, and then it's like, Sam, we can do that. We'll do that second half. Just get through to the. But I mean, it sounds so stupid to say. When can you ever hit a football too well? Well, Trent Alexander-Arnold's probably done it, because I reckon I've hit a ball about five times in my whole life, as clean as he's hit a ball in about 9 or 10 times a game, and he just strolls onto it and goes, yeah, I'll put it there. He put it so much where he wanted it. It was just the goal got in the way. Great, great strike. He one of our best players yesterday. But there was lots of them. Like, you can pick an out for his block. It was fantastic. Reading the holding the line, playing well. Gomez was fantastic. Diaz second half electric. It stays until the end. Gets his goal. Brilliant. But yeah, that's the chance for Trent. The Gakpo. It's having the players now. That, as I said before, about, you know, you don't have to make a substitution, you can change them on the pitch, but they can also adapt their game to, like, well, this, I'm getting fouled all over the gap, but I know I can just lay this ball off perfectly to Trent, and I know we'll get a shot off and we might score here. And if that goes in, that would be most, like, that would have been so deflating for them to go, oh, we had all them like mad chances, mad scrambles in the box, hit the bar themselves, and then Trent has that. And it was just being like, well, that's classic, that's absolutely classic. It didn't go in, obviously, but I think you're right. It did give the belief in the team that we're actually over the worst of this now.
Yeah.
And once we can get in and have a conversation with the manager and his team, you know, we can go from here, build off that. And we did second half. We had lots of chances. I remember, you know, the game felt so stretched. At points, it was just end to end. There wanted to be a goal. I can't believe it. We only got two. It's mad to say that we won 2-0 very comfortably. Like a good away performance in the second half, but I was like, we had loads and loads of chances. Darwin has a one where he sort of Bournemouth-esque, where he cuts in and rifles it, and you can tell by, like, it didn't really get much of a reaction, to be honest, off the commentators on the telly, but you see Adam Ramsdale's face and he goes, whoa, that's close, that, you know. I was nearly picking that up my net. Yeah. But it was just like we regrouped, and I think 100% that chance enabled us to, like, splash of water to the face, right, let's go.
Just a quick one there on the coverage on TV. They spent the entire first half talking about how many shots Arsenal have had out. Go ahead, lads, just show me how many were on target.
Mm-hmm.
And they had they'd had 18 shots, 5 on target. By the end of the second half, Arsenal had had 5 on target.
Is that right?
They didn't have a shot on target in the second half, but the coverage isn't telling you that. The commentators aren't telling you that. I mean, it was a cracking game of football second half, but it wasn't as even as the telly would have you believe.
Okay, we'll talk a little bit more about the second half in a minute, but first of all, we're going to play you a clip from last night's post-match pint. So straight after the game, for subscribers, we do audio and video reactions. So the post-match audio was up in Crosby. The new Angus yesterday that Mr. Andy Heaton did. I listened to this morning. It was very good. And then post-match pint, which I haven't listened to yet or watched yet, but I will today, was from the City Centre. They did the Red Lion. So you're going to see a clip from that. And these shows are available for subscribers as soon as possible after every game.
The longer it went on, that they didn't score, they didn't take the chances, I just felt that we got to a point where we brought Jota on and we were still in it. I felt there was only going to be one winner. And the longer the game went on, I was just more resolute within that, really. And I felt that, particularly that second half, the way then we were able to pick them off on the counter-attack, got to say, there was a lot of stones there shown by the manager as well to make the substitution that he did, to move Trent into midfield, to bring Conor Bradley on at right back, and bring Bobby Clark on. I thought that was a great move, and also the little change they made at half time where he moved Diaz over to the right, Nunes to the left, and Gakpo to the middle, which then became Jota.
Worked a treat, didn't it?
It absolutely did. It really stretched them. It gave us an outlet every single time, two runners either side of the pitch. And as I say, I felt that the longer the game went on, I really did feel that it was only going to be one winner, and that was going to be us. When you look at us, we are all business, particularly when we've got Jota on the pitch. He might be the most efficient striker I've ever known. He is, for a player who's not that big, he's not that quick, you know, he's so intelligent. You always feel when he's on the ball or when there's a ball coming into the box, he's going to be the one to somehow find space. And when he wins a header and it's the bar, from a corner? Yeah. When, you know, he's arguably the smallest fella on the pitch, and he outjumps everyone. It always seems to me he's 10 steps ahead of everybody else on where the space is, where the ball's going to go. And even with the final goal there as well, again, it's his run. And so many times we'd seen Liverpool on the counter-attack not pick the right final pass. Mm. Jota gets one chance to do that, and he pulls out an absolute beauty of a pass to Diaz. Yeah,
consistently making the right decisions is such 100%. A skill, it's such an asset to have, and he's got it in abundance.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
There we are. So make sure you download the app if you want to watch more. You get some free tokens if you never downloaded the app before, or go to theanfieldapp.com/subscribe to get all our best post-match reaction and everything else that we're doing. There's rumours of a gutter tomorrow, but Gutman's rogue at the moment. Honestly, he's in there and everywhere. He gutters when he wants.
He's chasing Kylian Mbappe.
Is that what he's doing? he's on the trail. So yeah, rumours of a gutter tomorrow. Then all looking ahead, obviously, to a League Cup semi-final, and it is exciting season. As Ian said before, quadruple chasing Liverpool. Great time to subscribe to the Anfield app. The Darwin chance that Mike talked about before the break, Mo, was another brilliant Trent pass. And at this point, I think he's really pairing in the game. Yeah. And you know, is like Mike says, he does something every game that is like the best thing lots of other footballers have ever done. Yeah. I mean, it's just like, oh, this is what I've done this half.
Well, I mean, it's the second consecutive game he's hit the bar with a shot that no one thought he was going to take.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm just loving his attitudes in the game at the moment. It's almost like he can solve whatever problems thrown at him. And there were so many times where if you wanted to make Trent go off of his attacking game, then you give him defensive problems. But that doesn't seem to be the case anymore. It seems to be able to, the plans for those defensive problems aren't just about him anymore. So he's not having to think about that so much. He's able to concentrate on what happens the other way. And yeah, it was fantastic. Like, the thing I like about the second half performance the most was obviously there's the things that we change. We move Darwin out wide. It gives us more of a deep threat. It gives us an out ball. But the things we didn't change were the things that I love. Because obviously the pressing in the first half was a bit of our downfall. Like, Trent called it naive after the match, and I think he was right, right. in some of the ways we were trying to do it. But we didn't change that part. We were still trying to play out from the back. Arsenal was still trying to press us, still trying to press us into mistakes. But we weren't making the mistakes. So we were just doing the same thing, but better.
Yeah.
And that meant that we were getting out and getting the other side of Arsenal's midfield and driving in towards them. And that was what causes them problems. And Trent, when we're in that mode, is, I think, better than anyone at the moment in terms of, there's the moment where he takes the ball in one movement, spins, and then just starts to burn past, I forget who it is in midfield, and you just see him driving in the midfield, you just think, okay, he's a midfielder now. Like, he can do this job. Like, there's been times when I've been a little bit like, well, yes, he can do it when he's coming from there to there, but can he do it from the start there? Can he be a midfielder? Yeah, that's done now. And I'm just enjoying watching him finding new ways to influence this game.
Yeah, he's finding new ways to influence games and to run games as well, Ian, and that's what I'm saying. And that was another thing that people said, oh, you know, he can't run a game. And like, well, he seems to be running some pretty big ones to me. And wherever he plays, you know, wherever he starts, whether he's starting in one position, moving to another, or vice versa, or just, I think a lot of it is him reading the game, and he reads the game so well. He knows when to step in, and he knows where he needs to be. And I don't even think it's necessarily always a conversation between the manager, although I'm sure that they'll have them. I think there's a lot of trust in him to be where he needs to be at the right time to massively affect football matches.
Completely. His understanding of what his position is now and what his freedom is within that position is becoming more and more complete by the week, I think. And I thought yesterday was an incredible example of it. There are games where he will play more of an orthodox right back and stay there for an entire half. And there are games where he will step into that little position in front of the back two immediately. And yesterday was kind of like doing what was needed when it was needed. He took a little spell where he decided he was going to play at left back for a while. And he just stayed at left back for a few minutes and just thought, yeah, I'll control it from here. And there's a moment where he's splitting the centre backs in the same way that we've seen Fabinho or Henderson do it over the years, and plays a more orthodox quarterback position and distribute the ball from there. But he's also playing at the top of the midfield. He understands everywhere he needs to be at every single moment. And I don't think he's getting caught out. And this annoyed me again at the end of the I can't remember whether it was the end of the game or the match of the day discussion. Do we now need to move Trent into midfield? And should he move there for England? Couldn't give a shit about England. Really, really could not care less about England in any way, shape or form. Don't care whatever happens to them. I'd be happy never to see him play for England at any point again, because it just means he's preserved for us. You don't move Trent to midfield. You get Trent to do the Trent job, which is utterly unique to him. And you keep the entire field open for him to do what he does and affect when he wants to affect. And he's affecting brilliantly. And I think, you know, that shot where he hits the bar, that's because of his positioning.
Yeah.
But it wasn't as dramatic as the one from the Newcastle game, which would have been, you know, we might as well have just packed up football at that point and gone, right, well, Trent's won football. Let's go home now.
Give it to Trent and let him take it home. The ability to hit these forwards is massive for us, Mike, because you can see when they get on the ball that they're dangerous. You know, we talked there about the pass to Darwin, but they all have the moments when they're driving at goal. And, you know, when you can get these exciting forward players on the ball in dangerous positions, they will cause problems. And we were just leading up to the goal starting to cause them more and more problems. And then Jota comes on, and I thought his drive into the centre was excellent, the setup Diaz, and it's a smart save, you know, from Ramsdale. Yes. Certainly smarter than anyone's, Alisson had to do to go back to Ian's point. But, you know, you're just throwing it on an extra person like Jota, who's then giving them a whole host of new problems, you know, to deal with. And it's just that you know, the bench wasn't as strong as what we'd have liked yesterday. But when you've got someone like Jota on there who's able to add to, you know, the fact that the Diaz has been really dangerous, that Darwin's sort of having moments, you know, I talked about Gakpo before, but, you know, when you were able to get these forwards on the ball in dangerous positions, they'll cause problems for anyone, and that's how the goal comes about.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really glad we managed Jota and McAllister the way we have done, by the way, like, because it's important that they're fit and available every single game for this January. Now we're losing Endo and Salah. So, I'm, you know, you could have started Jota and you could have took him off, but no, I'm glad that we got the impact out of him. He got labelled, didn't he, at the start of his career at Liverpool as a bit of a super sub. But he's just a super player.
Yeah. Like, and just super.
Just when he's on the pitch, put him on the pitch and he'll do things that are... I don't think the best physicists and all scientists in the world can tell me how he stayed in the air for as long as he did with that header that hit the bar.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal. What a phenomenal player. He gets dragged to the ground several times by either Saliba or Gabriel. And just because I reckon I understand that more than anything when you're playing against someone who's just good at football, but will you just go away? just hit the floor and stay there and don't cause me trouble with your dribbling or your passing or your runs off him behind me. They know he's good. They know he scored goals and won goals against Arsenal, set them up. He's what a footballer, and we've got a lot of them. Thank God we have, by the way, because any football team in the world would miss Mohamed Salah for a month. And we, you know, who knows, we still may potentially, but while it's looking like we've got a Gakpo, we've got a Jota, we've got a Diaz, and we've got a Nunes, you're like, oh, one of them is going to score. And if he doesn't score, like, he'll hit the bar and set someone up, or like roll one. I don't know what you'd do. Like, you need four people to be having off days. And then the people who set them up to be having off days for even going, well, we'll get at Liverpool now because they're not going to score. And it might happen for minutes, but it's not happening for 99, whatever it is, and that we end up playing these days in the football. And it's the togetherness. Like, we speak about the 21-22 season, but Jota comes out in that season and says, the more games we play, like, we play in every game we can. Everyone's getting minutes, everyone's getting sharpness, everyone's getting the rhythm to be called upon in Premier League games, to be called upon whenever's needed. We've had seasons in the past, haven't we, where, you know, we've had such a settled team, and then one link falls out and you're like, oh, that's it, it's gone. And like, I'm probably more talking about 13-14 than that, and we needed the squad, and like, very rarely than what we need it now. But because we've built it in a way now, we go deep into these competitions, you do have the quality of the likes of Jota off the bench. You do have the ability to have, well, Gakpo might play and score 10 in 10, but he'll score 4 in 10 and set 5 in 10 up. And then you're like, well, that's 9 goals in them 10 games he's setting up. And people are talking about how X needs to do more. But when he does, you'll be like, scoring loads of goals in, you know, setting loads of goals up. And We look after the players really well. We do McAllister really well, and Gravenberch comes on and plays really well as well. Carries the ball forward. Jones was superb again yesterday, I thought. I could talk about every single performance for a long while, because they all had the little struggle early doors and just got over it and just grew and knew what they needed to do in the game, and they all executed superbly. And the kids coming on, we'll talk about them obviously, but it feels like a brave move at that time. Yeah. And you're like, the game's still in the balance here, but he just goes, nah, they train every day with these players, every single one on the pitch there has the confidence in who I'm bringing on, and it works to a T, and it was just brilliant to see.
On Jota, Mo, I'm going to do a rugby analogy now. Oh, yeah, and when Neil finds out, it might be the last time I'm ever allowed to host a free show.
Screw it. Let's go.
So let's enjoy it. The way he runs with the ball reminds me of when an attacking team in rugby get close to the line and they just give it to someone a big forward who can run low and hard. And it's so hard to defend against. Like, you've played a bit of rugby in school, I played a little bit, and the hardest thing to stop was a guy who could just get this low sense of gravity and would just steam for the line, and you're like, you're trying your best to kind of like to stop him, and you can't. The way Jota runs reminds me of a prop forward coming to the try line, you know, close in, and it's like, you know he's going to do it, but you can't stop him.
I mean, he's a lot more likely to score as well. But no, I'm 100%, I know what you mean. And the thing I love about Jota, he knows exactly what the people facing him don't want. Yeah. He knows what they don't want to have to deal with. And like Michael was saying before, he's just a pest. Like, if you looked at the first half, you looked at the way that Saliba and Gabriel played Nunes, they pocketed him pretty well, really. We weren't really able to get the ball to stick to him. It was coming back, and that was what was helping Arsenal kind of build up this pressure on us. Second half, he's out there destroying Ben White. But then you see the way that Jota plays against him, the kind of just the little knocking him off balance at the wrong moment when the ball's coming in. And like you say, taking interesting angles against him and just generally giving them something to think about every half second and something different to think about. He's just someone who I always feel confident. When we have him on the pitch, I always feel confident that we're going to cause problems. And if we get a chance, he's going to score. And I'm like Mike, I'm glad that he didn't start. I'm glad that hopefully he's going to be ready to go and go and go and go. Because he's going to be so important, particularly in this period. Like, we're missing Salah. Yeah, it's true. He's the guy, I feel like, if it's going to be a one chance, one goal, one nil game, Jota's your man. And we talk about the other forwards and the scoring records and what have you, nothing. Like, Gabriel Martinelli, right? He came on for Arsenal, yeah, and he got Arsenal's crowd up. He looked like he was doing lots of really good things. You know, he was testing training, he was doing this, he was doing that, rah, rah, rah. He did nothing in that game.
Conor Bradley had him right off, and then he wouldn't go anywhere near.
Exactly.
Well. Like, he wouldn't even try and run him because he thought, oh, he's just had me off.
He had those four moments when he first came on, and every single time the ball went to a Liverpool player. He didn't find an Arsenal man once. Mm. And then from that point on, he was passing it backwards. So he's not affecting the game. And then you look at Darwin Nunes, you look at Luis Diaz up until the point where he scored, you look at Cody Gakpo. They are doing things that are affecting, that are contributing to Liverpool scoring goals. Arsenal were having to change the way that they were playing because of what Nunes was doing, because Mourinho was out there. Our game plan for Martinelli is to basically use Trent as a sacrificial lamb and just say, okay, you can beat Trent, but the moment you beat Trent, we've got this guy to come over. And that's exactly what happened again and again, yeah, and again. And then he's thinking he's beating him and he's getting well, but they're just falling into our trap. And that's the difference. You can have players who don't score goals, but you can have players who don't score goals but affect the game positively, who actually create goal-scoring opportunities and chances for other people. And we've got those. And we've also got enough players who don't play in the front who are good in front of goal. So if these players in the front are creating chances and the guys from deep are able to take those chances, we're still going to score goals.
Goals throughout the team, Ian, and, you know, even when, you know, you need a bit of help at hand for the opener, it's caused by pressure and, you know, you see, it's not just the pressure of the free kick, and it's a great free kick, but it's the pressure of the fact that we are creating the better chances at that stage of the game. There's the pressure of Arsenal thinking, oh, here we go again. You know, we're struggling to score in another game. It's pressure from situations, and we feel really well equipped to take advantage of them now because, A, we've got someone like Trent Alexander-Arnold who can put in a fantastic free kick, but not just him. I was surprised that we scored sort of when we did, really, and I felt by that point we were the only team sort of likely to do so.
Yeah, I'm going to answer all this a little bit sideways and I might ramble a bit, but it's all pertinent. Stick with me.
Well, I didn't want to be an allergy, so anything goes
well,
to
me. I didn't understand any of it. There was a rugby gag in there. I didn't know what the hell you were talking about. There's a couple of things in the side that are important to us. I think strength, physical strength of the players, we're not talking enough about. Gakpo is able to play those balls off because his physical strength, for a guy who's quite tall and slim, his physical strength is ridiculous. The second goal is the game intelligence in the side because Jota tells Darwin exactly where he wants him to put the ball and Darwin puts it there. So Klopp was talking the other week about Jota's great strength being his footballing brain. He knew exactly what he wanted because he knew exactly what he was going to do with it and exactly where he was going with it. And that's, you know, you're not seeing that over the with Martinelli and Havertz and, you know, whoever on this side. You're not seeing the game intelligence. And the strength and intelligence of Ryan Gravenberch in both the goals. Mm. So the goal-scoring chances are coming from the left-back position, from Joe Gomez putting his foot in front of a player, for Gravenberch to get the ball to go up the field for the second goal, but for the first goal, for Gomez to be up on the touchline, to give it back to Gravenberch with a short ball, for Gravenberch to hold and hold and hold and only go down when it's obvious that it's a foul and get a free kick in a really good position. You know, I'm not saying, you know, he worked for the free kick or anything, but he was strong enough to stay up for as long as was necessary to make sure that there was no question about it being a foul. So that intelligence, that strength that they've got, And I'd just been talking at that point about the fact that we needed to make use of one of our dead ball situations, because we haven't been great on them the last few weeks. Started the season brilliant on dead ball situations, hadn't been great the last few weeks. That one, that was so good. I thought it just gone in directly. I didn't even realise it hit an Arsenal head at that point. I just thought it just gone straight in. That was a hell of a free kick. But we're creating all over the pitch, and at that point, they know that we can hurt. They know that we can hurt them from the second Trent hits the bar. And we know that as well. We've got that. We've always got this in our locker. We need that. We need that 1 second, and we're going to be away, and we'll get to you, because we can get through anybody at the moment, with the exception of Man United the other week. But, you know, you can't have everything, can you? But it's a learning process. But that's where we are. We know how to create the moments, and the whole side knows how to create, and they know what everybody else can do. There's a real togetherness and a real cohesion to the side at the moment.
I love the winner, the second, you know, for loads of reasons, Mike. First of all, it's right in front of us, and that's always brilliant. And in a way, it's obviously the perfect time to make it 2-0 from 1-0, because it's just sort of game over. But, you know, I love the goal in real time. Obviously, the finish is brilliant. But watching it back, what strikes me is just how many options Jota's got. So Darwin plays that ball to Ian Darwin plays the ball to Jota.
I have no involvement in that one.
That Ian was talking about. It just sort of jumped. Just always on my mind, Ian. So Darwin plays the ball to Jota that Ian was talking about. But then afterwards, he sprints. He absolutely tears to be another option on the left hand side, and that puts the defenders in doubt. When Darwin actually hits the ball, I counted five Liverpool players in the box, which is quite something, really. From a fast break, from the situation we're in, the fact that we're sort of 1-0. Five Liverpool players in the box.
In the 95th minute.
Yeah, and so to have the fitness to do that, but also the will, and also to recognise, listen, I'm going to get in here because this is a chance to sort of win the game, but also, even if I don't get the ball, I'm creating an option, and I'm creating, you know, uncertainty in the defence. They didn't know where to go, those defenders, and he ends up sort of having a bit of a swing of his leg at it, misses it, and Diaz puts it in. But yeah, it was just a brilliant time to score, but also a brilliant Liverpool goal, and Jota obviously picks the best option, because like Ian says, he's the smartest man in the room.
The best thing about that is, like, as you mentioned, the bodies, but imagine if that was just 2-on-4, you'd be like, oh, go with the corner flag. Because, like, you've got no option but to do that, really, have you, in them situations? But where you've got, like, five bodies, and you go, I can go there, I can hit it myself, I can play him. It's like, they don't know what you're going to do, and you can decide what you think is the best option, and then you can either hit it yourself, or you can just give it to Luis Diaz, and he'll absolutely blam it in. Which is we're all a fan of. Anyone doing kicking the ball in the goal as hard as that, we all like that. And it could be risky, because he could give the ball away and then we're exposed and we break this, that, and the other, whatever. But in theory, it and practice, by the way, because it turns out that way. Mm-hmm. It's one of the bravest things that we need to do, and we did it. And having the bravery to be able to do that and flood the box is just. They don't know, as you mentioned there, they don't know what to do. They don't know what you're doing. And when they do know what you're doing, it's in the net. Or like, you know, even if we've missed, it's in your half, lad, and we're gonna stroll back and get into our shape. And it's the most sensible, brave thing that we did all game. And it buried it. And it's the moment the game deserved. And the moment, I'd say the performance deserved as well. Look, there's many ways you can win a game of football. You can dominate from start to finish, and they're great. You know, you can be lucky. That's absolutely brilliant. But just being able to hang into a game, play yourself into a game, miss chances upon chances, and hit the bar at the post, and think, oh, it's just not happening. And then for it to happen, two goals in the last 10, 15 minutes, whatever it was, and to be like, well, you can't really argue. You missed your chances. We've took ours. You missed. We hit. That's the mentality of Liverpool. You miss, we'll hit. And by the way, once we've hit, we'll hit you again, and then we'll hit you again, and then it'll be too late. Then you might as well just go home. And the awareness of Jota, the not to rush it, not to hit it, not to play the wrong pass, perfectly roll it, go on, score, have a shot, make him do something. And if he saves it, we'll tap it in. There's five of us up here. It was just everyone knew what they were doing.
I love that phrase on sensible bravery from Mike. I think that's really sort of telling, and it's quite apt, isn't it, in terms of how we do play, because it's bravery, but it's bravery when it's the right time to do it, and that's what you see in that goal.
Definitely, and I think obviously, at that point, Arsenal are desperate. I think before that, Ramsdale's kind of pushed everyone into our half and just tried to boot it up and tried to fight for second ball. So they've really got nothing left. And Arsenal players are in desperation mode, but we are in clear, concise mode still. You have to be able to win the battle, win the physical battle. But then once you win the ball, you know exactly what we're doing. And that was so clear from that. The thing I love about this game, more overarching over everything, is that I was ready to give it up before we kicked off. I was like, you know what? We don't have to fight for all four. We can just do a really good job on the three. Maybe we don't need to go that far. And like the draw, the spectre of missing the winter break and having a replay was really getting to me. So I was like, you know what? If Arsenal win this game, we're unlucky. So
I was getting me boots on, to be honest.
But then the game starts.
Yeah.
And then you obviously want to win.
Yeah.
And I just think about Arsenal sitting there, because they're like, they threw everything they had at us. Like, obviously Gabriel Jesus isn't playing, but he was playing Anfield and didn't do that much. Zinchenko wasn't playing. He got roasted at Anfield by Salah, so he ain't coming back in. So that's as good as it gets for Arsenal. Like, all of their other good players who you say or who could score a goal or could be offensive or could be dangerous, they all played. None of them scored. And then you look at Liverpool's team and look at who wasn't playing. No Salah, no Van Dijk, no literally everybody, it seems, by the time that we were actually in the point of winning the game.
I put a joke in my agenda, if I can do it, please.
Yeah, go ahead.
Winning with the best player in the world on international duty, and Mo Salah is away as well.
Hey! Well, exactly. And I mean, the psychological comfort blanket that we get from Mo Salah and Virgil van Dijk is highly underrated.
See, them two start that game, the whole thing, the Arsenal press probably isn't as effective because Van Dijk will just play a 65-yard ball right onto Mo's chest. And
exactly, you know that. I mean? The amount of times in that first half where I was thinking, normally in this situation, we would just do exactly that. Virgil would just play the ball to Salah. And it's like, shit, we underestimate how hard it is for Salah to control that ball every time and how hard it is for Virgil to hit him every time. We just assume it's easy because they do it all the fucking time. It's not easy. Yeah. And to have those two totems out of the side gives any team playing us hope, because like I said, they are so dominant. They are such a comfort blanket for us and such a big aura for the opponents. And they think, okay, this is our big chance now. We can go out there. And they still couldn't do it. So when we go there in the league in a couple of weeks with those two back in the team, they're going to be like, well, how do we beat this team? Because, I mean, apart from last season when everything was a bit dodgy, they haven't actually beaten us in a very long time. And we've beaten them a lot. And this is another one to put in the psychological bank. So while at the moment Arsenal are trying their hardest to believe they're on the same level as us, they're not yet. They're still the little brother.
Just a final word on the subs as well. Obviously, we've talked about Jota today, but for the two young lads who come on, Bradley and Clark, you know, someone mentioned before it was a sensible, brave move from the manager to throw them on where he does. After the game, I'm like, did they come on at 1-0 or was it 0-0? But it's 0-0 when they sort of come on. And first of all, it's the manager showing a lot of faith in them, and it's repaid. I think both of them, you know, particularly Bradley, I thought did really well. But, you know, they both, you know, come out with it with a lot of positives. But I think just being part of that experience of being on the pitch when you win a huge FA Cup tie is going to be absolutely massive. I bet they're buzzing today. I bet they're, you know, reading everything and responding to 100 messages. I hope so, because, you know, they've been part of a huge Liverpool moment now, and what that does to any young player must be absolutely huge.
Yeah, I mean, they came on and they both impressed in moments. They both had moments that stood out in terms of, you know, Bradley showed what he can do on the right. Clark, obviously, as we've already said, takes the most intelligent yellow card you're ever going to see, because that's the yellow card that so many of our players haven't taken over the last couple of seasons. We were begging for that kind of foul last season in certain games, and it never happened. That one, yeah, just foul him, take the yellow, you've just stopped the attack, you've done the sensible grown-up thing. I've got to be honest, I thought when he made the subs, because it happens on, I think, 75,
yeah,
it felt very prearranged. It felt very much sort of, I will take, who was it, came off Curtis and McAllister at that point?
Curtis and Elliot.
Elliot,
yeah. Curtis and Elliot. I'll take you two off at 75 because I need you both on Wednesday. So it felt like a very obvious sort of, yeah, because when McAllister went off, Jones went into the six, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And did really well there. I'll take the two of you off because I need to rest. Yeah, it felt like it going, well, whatever happens in the rest of the game happens in the rest of the game. If we're still in it, we're still in it. If we lose, it felt like one moment where you kind of like just throw it to the winds now, just see what happens, what fate gives it. But it came on, and yet they were involved in that happening. So they're involved in a 2-0 win, because when they come on, it's 0-0.
Yeah.
And it's a 2-0 win when they're on the pitch and they both contributed to it. You can't ask much more. And it's, as I said before, I worried when I saw the bench and thought there's not a great deal of change there. Basically, all we had was Joss and Gravenberch. Turns out, no. We had four lads. I think there's a bit of content for Rob for the Gus when it happens, if he hasn't done his agenda yet. I want a big conversation at some point about what happens, what this means for Fabio Cavaglio, because Fabio Cavaglio is back at the club. We had a very slim bench yesterday. He couldn't get on that bench, obviously, because he's off again.
Yeah, they can't play him. And then send him elsewhere.
But we trusted in the lads who were there. And, you know, everyone's been talking about Bobby Clark for a while and being unlucky to actually not get a game. He's come on. He's shown ability. What more can you ask for the lads?
Yeah, and to have that moment is massive for them, isn't it? But also, you were talking before about, you know, players having to come to a party at different times. The more of these players you've got, the better. And listen, I'm not saying that Bobby Clark is going to suddenly have a huge second half of the season where, you know, we're talking about him, but, you know, he might be needed in key moments, and he showed that he can respond and he can put in positive performances, and it's another one who can do that. Brilliant.
Yeah, it's the being able to hold your head up. They're there because they deserve to be there, obviously, but then when they get to do it on a pitch and think, well, I'm not just training with these people now, you know, in a game situation there, they trust me, the manager trusts me, all my players trust me. Imagine just going to training, like, what a job. They go and play with some of the best footy players, and sometimes you might, like, at Liverpool, players might never see the pitch, but then they'll go and have another good career somewhere else in football, and these are getting to train, but then being trusted on the pitch. And you know, Bradley goes on loan to Bolton, doesn't he, do the year, and he's had a bit of a tough time with injuries and stuff like that. I think Bobby Clark goes on the pre-season tour, does really well, but I think he has a couple of injuries, like niggling injuries through the season.
Yeah,
he's
been unlucky with injuries this season, yeah.
But at that point, they're still trusted. Ultimately, you're coming on the pitch now to play for Liverpool Football Club. So whatever you've done in training, you put on the pitch. And they didn't really get flustered or, like, panic. You know, that thing I mentioned before, I was joking, but he literally pockets Martinelli when he knocks it around him. And that could be like, oh, he's fast him, he's boss him. But he nearly won the league last year with Arsenal. Played, scored loads of goals in the Premier League. He just went, nah, I'll run with you, I'll take the ball off you. And still be an attacking fullback, making chances. Bobby Clark, trusted on the ball by everyone again, makes the foul, actively, like, plays a huge part in winning the game, just managing the game. You can't buy that experience. You can't train that experience. That happens to you in the moment. You're trusted and thrown into the limelight, and they both done superbly well. And I believe anyone decided to pick off that bench yesterday would have done themselves just as much justice, because they were coming into a team that believed, and that's it's not something like you can touch, but it spreads around the whole team and the club.
Yeah, to add further weight as well to Ian's theory that it was predetermined subs. Apparently, his dad Lee Clark was on the radio in the afternoon saying how nervous he was going to be watching him play. So I think Bobby had the tip off.
Yeah.
I mean, he used to play for Newcastle. He should know better.
Yeah,
you know, you understand parents getting all giddy and running their mouth a little bit, but not when they play 400 games or whatever. So Lee Clark played, but no, a really nice moment for them and a great moment for Liverpool generally, Mo, and it puts us in a fantastic position. You know, we're you know, early January now, and we're competing for everything. And I think this time last year, we were competing for absolutely nothing. And so, kind of, you know, to be in this situation where everything does feel possible, and also feeling like we haven't, like, got out of third gear, maybe, there's more to come, and so. I understand that people, you know, have worries about the number of games, and 21-22 took a lot out of this squad and had knock-on effects to the year after. But I think it doesn't feel like that type of season for me in terms of like that was like relentless. Whereas I think obviously being in the Europa League helps a little bit because it's, you know, the group stages just aren't as intense as the Champions League ones. You're not playing the same level of opposition. It just feels like Jürgen's obviously been rotating really well sort of throughout the season, different players, you know, emerging at different times. I just feel like we're managing this like a really big club.
Yeah. And we are doing it really well. I think when the comparisons to 21-22 and the reaction to it, I think a lot of people are nervous about it, myself included. But those guys have had a lot of baggage. That was kind of almost like the final punch.
Yeah.
They'd taken quite a few body blows, and that was the one that kind of eventually rocked them. This new team have got a bit of a stronger chin at the moment, and we've been seeing it week in, week out in the Premier League, the amount of battles they've had to come through. So I feel like they can absorb the absolute worst case scenario and go again. But hey, why are we talking about the worst case scenario? We can do what we didn't do last time and actually win them. Like why can't we win them? And I think going back to what you're talking about, the young players, it's not just a win for the club, it's a win for the academy. And there was, what, 5 academy players who played in that game, 7 if you want to include Gomez and Elliot, but we probably shouldn't really. But that would give everyone a boost that these guys are playing a part in what could potentially be a historic season for the club. And yes, there's going to be times when we're tested. Yes, there's going to be times when we're stretched thin because of injuries, because of games. There's going to be times when we've got some players out of form. But the group is so strong. The group has such belief that we are able to ride whatever's coming for us. And I do truly believe that this squad has what it takes to go all the way. And it's going to take a lot of luck if it happens, but why the hell not?
Why the hell not? Why the hell not?
I've been sat here counting how many teams can win a quadruple this season.
That'll be one, yeah?
Yeah, that's us. That's it.
Yeah, well, Chelsea have struggled. They're not even in Europe. So they're still in the League Cup. I don't think Middlesbrough in Europe unless they bought back the Inter Toto, in which case I'm all for. What a competition that was. Okay, we'll leave it there. We've got Fulham on Wednesday. It's the semi-final of the League Cup. I think he's going to go sort of fairly similar. He's got not got loads of options. Loads of shows looking forward to that. So there'll be pre-match warm-up. Tomorrow there'll be a team talk after the press conference. Tomorrow, which is Pep Linders will do, which are always quite interesting. So check out that. Do download the app, as I said before. You'll have loads of great reaction to Sunday's game, looking ahead to Wednesday, and looking ahead to a fantastic time to be a Liverpool fan. Also, I should notice we're going back to America in March, and so we're doing the East Coast, so we had a fantastic time over sort of West, Middle, South. I don't know where they went. I didn't go, but it was a lot.
Yeah.
So we're back on the East Coast, more familiar territory, less sort of travel distance. So New York, Boston, or Toronto, Detroit again, or the shebang, Washington, and Delaware. We're doing as well. So tickets are available now, aren't they, Andy? Yeah, thumbs up. Tickets are available now. So if you want to come and see us in the March International Break in those cities, we'd love to have you, because otherwise it's just us drinking in the room. But we can do that here. So come out and see us. That's been the Outfield Wrap. Thanks a lot to Andy and Ash, to producing, obviously to Mo, to Ian, to Mike. I've been John Gibbons. Up the Reds. Sports Social Podcast Network.